So hey guys, we're back and we have another one for you. Today we have Bob Bose Bell on the phone. And Bob is a busy man, but he's not too busy to come and talk to us. This is actually his third time on the podcast. If you go back in the archives, you'll find in July 26th, 2021, we did his story. And he spoke about growing up in Arizona and his travels and adventures and how he came to being a co-owner of True West Magazine. Then he came back in 2022 on March 21st, 2022, and we spoke about his art. I was so intrigued on his art that he agreed. He'd never really done an interview about his art and in the depths of the scratch board and how he created it and his colors. Go back to that one. A terrific podcast about his art and his artist, his style. And if you think he's just doing Westerns, you're wrong, because he does a whole lot more. And then today we're going to be talking about his book called The 66 Kid, and a change, actually a second to The 66 Kid, which is The 66 Kids, which is a new book coming out with Marshall Trimble. And they're going to be sharing their stories, because Marshall is an amazing, and I've done a podcast with Marshall. He's fantastic to talk to. He's got amazing stories and history. And we even spoke about the lost years with Marshall. And Marshall admitted he hadn't spoken about the lost years in 25 plus years. So if you want a great podcast with Marshall, go back in the archives and find that one and listen to it. But before that, I want to thank my friends at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. I urge you to join and subscribe. Get the journal delivered right to your door. And they just came out with an online membership for $60. So you can go on, become a member, get all the cool things you like, and get the journal emailed directly to your door. So if you're in Europe and Australia and places where shipping is difficult and you don't want to wait for the journal, subscribe, become a member now, and get the journal delivered via email, delivered right to your door through the internet. I also want to thank Mark and Eric over at Tombstone Epitaph, one of Arizona's longest running newspapers. You can find the Epitaph at tombstoneepitaph.com. You get a new, true factual newspaper about 20 plus pages long, and you get Western history delivered right to your door. Can't be on the phone with Bob without mentioning True West Magazine. If you want to find out more about True West, please go to truewestmagazine.com. There is so much there. And become a subscriber. In the upper right-hand corner is going to be a little button that says subscribe. And become a subscriber, get True West Magazine delivered to your door. Beautiful artwork, fantastic color photos, and articles by the tops in Western history. I urge you to become a subscriber to Truist Magazine like I am. I'm a maniac, and you can start that off by going to truestmagazine.com. So Bob kind of crossed my path. If you guys are a Western history follower like I am, Bob Bose Bell is everywhere, and he's doing it right. And he said in other interviews with me, he says, "Mike, I'm right where I ought to be." And welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thank you for all those very generous plugs. You're a good man.
Well, thank you. I have to. You guys are doing a great job. You've been a supporter. You've never said no when I've called or texted and said, I have an interview, and do you want to do something? Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. So you've written a book called The 66 Kid. It's about raised on the mother road. It's part autobiography, part narrative history, and part oral history. It's printed by Voyager Press. It's about 192 pages long. And if you go on, is it 66kids with an S.com, we can get an autographed signature copy?
That is correct, yeah. 66kids.com. And you can just click there and say you want an autographed copy, and I'll sign it for you.
Okay. Looks like I'm going to have to do that. But there's a lot about the Mother Road. And Route 66, for those who are like, what are you talking about, is a road that started from Chicago. If I butcher this, please correct me if I'm wrong. It started from Chicago and went all the way to Santa Monica, California. It was established on November 11, 1926, and it covers 2,448 miles. In some locations, in some areas, it's called the Will Rogers Memorial Highway. In 1946, there was a song that came out called Get Your Kicks on Route 66. 1960 to 1964, there was a television show called Route 66. And in 1939, one of my all-time favorite movies, The Grapes of Wrath with John Steinbeck, talks about, shows the history of the Mother Road leaving the Dust Bowl and coming west. So how you were born, I think I get this wrong, you're born and raised in Kingman. Your father owned a gas station on Route 66. You used to ice the jugs when you were a boy, which makes me laugh every time. Talk about your love and passion and for creating a book called The 66 Kid about Route 66.
Well, as you so aptly put it, I grew up in the tourist town of Kingman, Arizona. My father had a classic gas station called Al Bell's Flying A, and there was a great big sign underneath the logo that said, Jugs Iced Free. And in 1957, my dad said, you're going to have to go to work. I know you're in Little League and you got other things going, but you need to help us in the service station and you need to ice the jugs. And so it was my job in those days. This is hard to believe for young people probably, but four guys attacked every car that came in and rang the bell. And the guys were dressed in white, crisp uniforms with their name over their heart. They had caps on. This is insane. It just seems otherworldly, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And they came marching out of the lube room. And the first guy would ask, can I fill it with ethyl? The second guy would wash all the windows all the way around. And the third guy would check all the tires, including the spare in the trunk. And then the fourth guy would go under the hood and cut all the fan belts. And that's actually a joke about how nefarious gas stations were on Route 66, and there was some of that shenanigans going on, but not at my dad's gas station anyway. But I was the fifth guy. I had my Little League cap on. I didn't have a uniform, but I would come up and march up to the window and say, do you have any jugs that you'd like to ice? And in those days, this is pre-air conditioning, pre-AC, and so everybody was going to go across the most deadly desert in the United States, across the Mojave Desert, as soon as they left Kingman. And so everybody carried a thermos or a jug in their car. And my dad bought a very expensive ice machine. And when the guy was installing it, he said, you know, I put one of these in Frank Sinatra's house. So we always felt we were no better, or we were just as good as Frank Sinatra. But I would take their jug, and then I would go into the lube room, and I would put ice in there and then fill it up with lube room tap water, which there's a name for water that I've never been used before. Mm-hmm. And I would bring it back out, and then I would get a tip usually. Sometimes I didn't get a tip, but mostly I got a quarter or 50 cents. And I saved all summer for my earnings. And my favorite magazine was True West Magazine, and I ordered a book called The Autobiographical Album of Western Gunfighters by Ed Bartholomew. It cost $11, and I saved for that entire summer to buy that book. And then to later buy True West Magazine is a dream come true.
But how did your love come about that all these years later? Maybe it was you and some friends talking, or you and your wife, or you and Uno talking, or whatever. and said to yourself, I'm going to write a book about being the 66 kid. I'm going to write a book about Route 66. How did that come about?
Well, it's interesting because I was one of the last to get it. I didn't. To me, when the Route 66 TV show was on and stuff, I didn't get what the big deal was, because my father made his living on the road as with the gas station. And my mother worked at the Arizona Highway Department and on the highways. And so to me, it was just a highway. I didn't understand why they would be doing a TV show about two-lane blacktop. It didn't make sense to me. And in fact, it wasn't until my wife got a job with the Department of Defense as a counselor for soldiers, and she got stationed in Spain, and she invited me to come over. And so I went over, and I had this idea that I would trace the history of the conquistadors coming to America, because in a part of Spain that she was in, it's called Extremadura, and that's where The Good, the Bad, the Ugly was filmed. It's kind of the American West of Spain. And so I was interested in that, but we went to a town called Rota, Spain, and it's where Christopher Columbus set out on his second journey to the New World. And he brought, I think, 26 horses and cattle, and introduced them to the entire continent. And my theory was, well, if you discovered where he found out, that's the birth of the cowboy, because it was Columbus who brought the horses and cattle to the New World. So we're at Rota, Spain, and I go into the museum where Columbus and all the artifacts of him leaving on this second journey that changed the world. And I go out on the beach, which is right there, and there's a big pier, and it's early in the morning. There's no one there, and the wind's blowing, and it's kind of stormy out. And I'm looking out there, and I'm thinking, man, those guys had some sand to be able to get those little wooden boats and go sail that way all the way across the Atlantic Ocean with all that cargo. And after a while, I spent about 10 minutes out there looking around. And then I got ready to leave, and as I turned, I saw on the beach the Route 66 bar. I did a triple take. I went, oh, this is amazing. I finally get it. Columbus sent over a legend, you know, that created the cowboys. And we sent back the legend of the mighty road, Route 66. And here it is, a bar named the Route 66 bar. And I came back and wrote the book. And I talked about growing up on this legendary road. And I finally got the deal. This is a big deal.
Have you had people, though, over the years, all your time in Arizona, asking you about stories of 66? Like, you, it's almost like you can't get away from it. Even though you don't live in Kingman anymore, you're still drawn to it. Is it something that people will ask you about? Is it something that you love? I would assume you love sharing stories about.
Well, yeah, I talk about it a lot because it was so profound in my upbringing. And then, like I said, I didn't really even realize it. And every summer, we would go to the family farm in Iowa, and because my father was a Norwegian kid who got drafted out of World War II and after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and he was sent to the Kingman Air Base in downtown Kingman, and he got off a train, a troop train, and had his duffel bag over his shoulder, and he was walking down the street, and he thought, what a hellhole, I'll never come back here. Well, he was one of 10,000 GIs, and he met my mother, who was one of 500 available women in Kingman, and I say available because there was probably more that were available, but they were married, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he married this cowgirl, and they had me, and then every summer with my dad's gas station, we would take the family car, a 57 Ford with a Continental tent on the back, all the way back to the family farm in Iowa. And so we were on Route 66, and I think I told you the story perhaps before, but I bought this alleged authentic photo of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, which turned out to be fake. And that made me so angry. And I read about it in the pages of True West Magazine that told the true stories of the West. And that set me out on the path. So as you can see, so much of the history of Route 66 is intertwined in my love for the West and all things Western.
In your book, and well, not in your book, because I read about the book and things that were in it. Again, we're talking to Bob Bozbell. You can find out more information about the 66 Kid and the kids, the 66 Kids, by going to truestmagazine.com. In the area were books, and there was like a breakdown of it. It talks about some of the roadside attractions. I haven't seen a lot of them. You know, the TP, I've been to Seligman, down to the river, and then Oatman, and I've been up along mostly the Arizona stuff, and Meteor City. Out of all the roadside attractions that you've seen on 66, what are one or two of your favorites and why?
Well, the really outrageous ones to me were the Whiting Brothers signs. I'm looking here at a picture in my studio of they would have these low wooden signs that went all the way across the top of a mesa. They were about 4 foot high, and there was one line of type, and it would say Whiting Brothers Gas Stations. Gas 19.9, that's 19.9 cents a gallon. Mm. Clean restrooms, and then it would say cryptically, "World's largest buffalo," and then it would say 2 miles. And so I was a kid, you know, standing on the hump of the transmission hump in the back seat. No seat, we didn't need seat belts. No. And so I'm just thrilled. And we would get into New Mexico, and of course my dad wouldn't stop. You know, we'd get there, and I'd go, "Hey, Dad, come on." "How do you get to Iowa, man?" So we could talk, you know, eat five times a day and talk about crops. You know, he was one of those World War II guys, which every time I talk to a group, you can see a lot of people nodding their heads and going, "I had that dad." We had to get up at 4 a.m., and we had to drive for an hour and a half before we could have breakfast. And then he had 2 eggs over easy with toast, black coffee, and then we're back out on the road. And he had to make time. So he never stopped. And that was part of what lit the fuse for me on being an Old West nut. Because I drive my kids crazy when they were growing up. Because I stop everywhere. I stop at every historical sign. That's a family name for historical marker.
I get you.
Yeah. And we stop at every historical sign and every museum. And my kids are the opposite. They would say to me, "Oh, Dad, do we have to stop?" And I said, "We have to get the history, kids, and you're going to love it." You know, and they side with my dad. They're like, "Man, where were you, Dad?"
At some point, the book is written or wrote. It's in the can. Mm-hmm. It's in the publisher. Yeah. It's living life. It's out there selling. It's spreading. It's spreading history about you, your family, your love of Route 66, Western history, oddities along the route. And then Marshall Trimble, born and raised here in Arizona. I'm going to ask you because I'm not sure. How did the two of you connect? Is going to be my first question. And then, how was it decided to the two of you write a book together and expand 66 Kid to the 66 Kids?
Well, that's a multifaceted question, and let me answer it as best I can. And the first answer is that when the book came out, the 66 Kid, it did very well. And it's the only book I've done with another publisher, and that's Voyager Press. And then it kind of faded. It did very well right out of the chute, and then it kind of drifted and it didn't sell that well. And I was talking to my art director, Dan the Man Harshberger, who also grew up in Kingman. And I confided to Dan, I said, "You know, if I had this to do over again, I would have stayed on the road." What happened was, as you mentioned at the top of the show, it's kind of half of a memoir and half of a celebration of Route 66. And I think that was kind of a mistake because I needed to just stay on the road. I needed to do one or the other. And there's an old saying, you know, if you're playing tennis, go to the net or stay behind the baseline. Don't get caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I think that the 66 Kid was kind of caught in the middle. Okay, that was my first realization. My second realization was Marshall Trimble and I have been working together for a long time, 22 years, as a matter of fact. He was one of my first hires at True West, and he does one of the most popular columns in the magazine called Ask the Marshal. Mm-hmm. And he's 85 years old now and still going. He is a national treasure. He is wonderful. And him and I were talking about the book, and he said, well, I've got a couple of stories to tell you about growing up in Ash Fork, you know, which is about 100 miles east of Kingman. So we were on the road at the same time, having a lot of the same experiences because he worked in a gas station as well. And so we got to going back and forth with stories. And I said, you know what? I need to revisit this and call it the 66 Kids plural. And Marshall and I will tell a whole new batch of stories. And from there, we started talking to guys like Jim Hinckley. And, you know, there's all these people who have written Sam Lowe. There's all these people who have written three more stories on Route 66. And so now we're going to have a whole bunch of people, mainly Marshall and I, but we're going to tell the stories, and we're going to have to probably do 5 books.
So you're going to have to do 5 books. Why is that?
Yeah, and then we may. My solution is to just call it Volume 1, Volume 2. We've got so many. There's so many stories that are. First of all, you have the music, you have the cars, you have the movies filmed on the road. You know, one of my favorite.
Oh wow!
Pictures. Two-lane blacktop starring James Taylor and Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys going backwards with the 55 Chevy with Laurie Bird. And they go right through. It's just one of my favorite road pictures because they actually filmed it on the road. And so when they're getting up through Perfume Pass coming into Kingman, you hear on the radio, AAA, Kingman, Arizona, air address. And that was... It was the Podunk radio station that was in Kingman when I was growing up. And so I just love that movie, and we're going to talk about that. And, of course, then there's Easy Rider, which precedes it, and they used the, you know, a lot of the same locations, and it's legendary. But it was filmed on the road. And so, you know, just that there's a book there, just the movies that filmed on the road. Like you said, you know, Grapes of Wrath. There's just a lot of road pictures. Edge of Eternity. They filmed it in my dad's gas station. They filmed a scene. I got up at 4 a.m. to go up there, and Cornell Wilde was the star. And they came into the gas station, and Cornell Wilde, after he was filming one of the takes, he came into the lube room, and I was standing there. And he said to me, he's standing right next to me in a Mojave County sheriff's uniform, and he looks down and he says, "You're up kind of early, kid." And I said, "Yes." And that was my conversation with the star of Edge of Eternity. And everybody in town went to the premiere at the State Theater in downtown Kingman. We got a lot to talk about, okay?
So talk about it then, because it's not what I thought. I thought it was going to be the two of you and Marshall telling stories to each other, but you actually researched movies and like you said, and songs and television shows and all that.
Marshall, he tells about going sneaking to the theater to see Jane Russell and the Outlaw and her bustier, and how he thought he was going to hell. As only Marshall could tell that story. He tells another story about his parents coming back from Colorado, and they were visiting a ranch up there, and his two brothers and him were fighting in the back seat, and his father stopped to pick up a Navajo hitchhiker who was dressed out in classic turquoise and the top, you know, the hat with the crown undone. And he gets in the back seat between them, and all the way to Gallup, the kids are speechless. And when they let him out, his mother says to his father, "I wonder if we can get him to ride with us to Ash Fork," because the kids had, you know, acted so. I'm ruining it. The story is fantastic, the way Marshall spins it out. And then I love this. Marshall and I are just talking, and Marshall says, "Yeah, you know, we were so poor. My brothers and I slept in the same bed." And then he adds cryptically, he said, "Yeah, I didn't sleep alone until after I got married." And so it's just an aside for Marshall because it's so fantastic. And I just love the guy.
I'm going to have to call Marshall now and see if he'll won't come on the radio and talk about it.
Yeah.
Knowing this and that all these stories are in there, and you probably have the book near you or in front of you, or can you share a couple of stories that are maybe your favorites, a few with us, and tell it in the Bob Bowes Bell, the way you tell stories?
Well, yes, and this is from the 66 Kid, and we revisit parts of this because we've all had similar stories, but I was just always amazed that when I graduated from icing jugs and I became a regular pump jockey, you'd hear the bell ring, you know, and that's something that they don't do anymore, but they would have these rubber hoses that ran across the driveway, and it helped if you were in the lube room, you know, changing oil on a car, you were cleaning the restroom, so all of a sudden you'd hear this ding, 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 and it was a car driving over these bells to tell you that there was a customer. And like I said, we'd all go out. There'd be three or four of us. And the tourists would get out of their car, and almost five times a day, certainly every day, a guy would get out, and he would say, "Well, you got gold in your gas?" And our gas was 45.9, which is hilarious when you think about it today. Mm. But it was higher. It went higher as you went across the state. And in Holbrook, you know, it was probably, Whiting Brothers, it was 19.9, as I mentioned. And then you get into Flag, and it was 30 cents. And then you get to Sligman, and it was 40 cents. And you get to Kingman, it was 45.9. And then it was actually even higher in Needles. That was the apex of gas prices. But these tourists would get out, and they would all say the same thing. "What do you got, gold in this gas?" And they thought it was so funny, you know. They thought, and it was like, "Well, that's the first time I've heard that today." You know, it was just so amazing to me. And then the second thing they would say is, "How far is it to California?" And then I would be washing the window, and I would say, "At 62 miles, sir." And they would say, and they would all say the same thing. They would say, "Oh, great. I can't wait to get out of this godforsaken desert." Well, I didn't have hard to tell them that 62 miles was Needles, California. You know, they were all guys, by the way. And they all, you know that they thought, "I can't wait to get to California." And they're thinking there's going to be women with bikinis on and with Lays, and they're waving in the sand, "Come to Cali." And all of a sudden it would be cool with an ocean breeze. No, it's Needles, California, where it's 98 degrees at midnight, okay, right on the Colorado River. And so that was just hilarious because they all said the same thing.
That is my dad to a T. My dad was convinced there was gold in the gas, and he would make me get out. I remember him doing this to me in Mojave, California, between Tehachapi and Palmdale. And he would make me get out. And I would run alongside the car and check the different prices on gas. And I would yell back, "It's 50 cents a gallon. Are you kidding me? Find something cheaper." And I'm like, "God, you know." And he was convinced there was gold in the gas. And so you got me. You got me on that one because that was my dad.
Yeah, it was a lot of dads. It was a really unique time in our history, and I feel very privileged that I got to live in that time.
How did you, on the research wise, were you, I know that you do a lot of work from home on the painting in your studio. On the research, though, did you go out and explore the areas face to face? Did you go to the museums to collect the stuff? Or was most of it readily available online, and you and Marshall were able to piece it together to create these stories?
Well, it's all of the above, really. Of course, I grew up there. I saved as much as I could. I have postcards of my father's gas station, pictures of the sign that Jugs Ice Free, which was blown down in a windstorm. My mother saved a lot of stuff. And of course, one of the most invaluable resources on the planet is the local historical societies in all the towns. And we have a great museum at the Powerhouse Museum in Kingman. And I highly recommend them because they have fabulous photos. And I was able to order a lot of photos that I'd never seen before. There's like really cool photos of the Arizona Inspection Station. People don't, inspection stations have kind of gone by the wayside now, but in the old days, we had gunfights out at the inspection station where kids had stolen a car and they killed the sheriff of, Sheriff Tarr of Mojave County. He went to intercept them and the kid pulled a gun on him and he said, and anyway, they got into a gunfight. He was killed. And then Life magazine, I think it was, put up a big article about the West still lives in 1957, you know. And so, yeah, the museums are absolutely fabulous. Now, I got to give a shout out to people knock social media all the time. But I have to say that on Facebook and Instagram, there are people posting fabulous postcards and stuff on Route 66 that I've never seen before. So that a lot of the new stuff, a lot of the stuff that's really a deep dive into obscure places like in Truxton, Arizona, we're finding online. So between all of those resources, we have found, Marshall and I and Dan the Man Harshberger and Stuart Rosebrook, we have found just extraordinary new stuff that's never been seen before.
Is your art also in the book?
Oh yeah. We couldn't preclude a publication without some outrageous artwork from my demented mind. Of course, it's in there.
But was it kind of maybe a stupid question to ask? Was it kind of like we've talked about your artwork before in another podcast and about how, you know, you do, I can't remember now, I have to go back, like 10 photos that you do, 10 pieces a day, and the way that you keep yourself going and the way your art is and the way you draw, and you just keep going and going and going. And when you did the art for the book, though, was it melancholy? I can't even say the word, melancholy? Did it take you back? Because your time with art and the way that you draw and the way you put it together, it's time-consuming. Was it different this time because you were doing something about a book and your father? Like if I was doing it, as I was doing it, I would be thinking about my father and my times on the road and my family and my mom. Like, did a lot of that come back?
Oh, yeah, big time. And it forced me to went out in the garage and I found, photo albums and stuff of us being on the road. And I just realized how special my father was and how he loved to drive. And I gave that to my kids. You know, I bitched about having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to leave to get an early start. But I taught my kids that. And my daughter just said the other day, she said, I got this from my dad. I feel so great driving early in the morning and no one's on the road yet. And it's just serene and peaceful and you can think about things. And I love that. Now, the irony of that is that you can't find that peace out on I-40. It's become, you know, city driving at 80 miles an hour and a lot of potholes. You have to go to the back roads. And that's why Stuart Rosebrook and I have created Two Lane Tales, which is an adjunct to the 66 Kids. And that is stories about being on the road when, you know, when Two Lane Blacktop was a wonderful thing. It's been distorted now because of all the highways and stuff. But you can still find, I still find if I'm going the back way to New Mexico from Cave Creek where I live, if you go up through Payson and then up on the Mogollon Rim and you shoot over past Overgarden, Sholo and Springerville, Eager, and then you get out into the plains there and you go through Dattle and Queen Mato and over to Alamogordo, Magdalena, and then to Socorro, and then you have to get a green chili burro at the Owl Cafe in San Antonio, New Mexico, and then on to Capitan. Those are still very, very remote roads. In fact, one time I was driving at 4 in the morning, and I was leaving from the Arizona state line over to Clamato, and I counted 5 cars in a 50-mile stretch. And then to me, that's heaven.
Well, I've done the road. Like, I've driven out to St. John's, and I've gone that loop. I didn't go, and then for a joke, I told my wife, I says, we're in Sholo. Let's drive to the New Mexico state line. It's only, 25 miles away. But that 25 miles, we passed 2 cars. And and then all of a sudden, what's unfortunate is cell phone service goes away. And for me, I get that uh-oh feeling. Like, if my wife wasn't there, I would care less. I broke down, I'll sleep in the truck for 5 days. I don't care. But it's so remote. And then, like you said, it takes over. When I drive, I'm the exact same way. I get up at 2 in the morning and we'll hit the road at 2:33 in the morning. And my wife she gets it. Her family was the same way. My kids hate it. Why are we leaving so early? And I'm like, we've got to beat the heat. Got to beat the heat across the desert. And it just takes you back. It takes you back. I'm glad your book is out. I'm gonna get your book and I'm going to have you sign it, because now I want to see it and I want to read it.
What you just said is exactly what we're building on with this new, I think it's going to be a publication. It might be online. It may end up to be its own magazine. We haven't decided yet, but Tulane Tales covers, now we're not necessarily on Route 66. We can tell the story of Tom Mix, on the highway, on the dirt road going from Oracle Junction to Florence, and he goes into a wash at 80 miles an hour. We can tell that story, We can tell other stories from other parts of the country that are famous, wonderful Tulane Tales. So we think that's a broader piece that's even bigger than Route 66.
I think it almost should be its own book instead of something that's online. It's got so much heart to it, and I think so many Americans can relate to it and live it in their minds. Because, you look at your artwork and you look at the things that you do in your articles. You like maps. So when I read your articles about a place, and then you put the map next to it, it's like I'm reliving it in my mind and going and visiting because I've been to those places. Maybe Tulane's Tales should be more than just something online, but, maybe a book.
Yeah, well, we're going to pursue a brand new idea, and it's like I said, it's an offshoot, an extension of the 66 Kids, and it's part and parcel to it. In fact, we're going to be doing a big show up at Prescott in May to celebrate the anniversary of the Phippin Museum, and I'm putting together a bunch of the 66 Kids. These are people who grew up like I did, Jim Hinckley and Kingman and Danny Romero and Sligman, cowboy, a musician. And we're going to have music. And I'm also doing the Raz Band, which was Hans Olsen and Jack Albus. And we had a band here in Phoenix in the 70s and 80s. And we're getting together one more time. And I see them. I'm trying to talk them into coming with us and maybe doing the Traveling Wilburys, Rolling Thunder, Bob Dylan kind of on the road, take the show to town from Prescott to Chino Valley to Lake Havasu to Parker to Kingman to Lake Havasu to Bullhead to White Hills. And so we may be rolling into your town putting on a show.
I'll be there. Every time that you're out during the week. So sometimes I'll be like, oh, God, why is he on a Friday? And I miss you. I miss seeing you. Because it's usually during the week. So, one of these days I'll get my schedule and I can come by and see you.
Let me give a plug and an invitation at the same time. I'm going to be showing some of my artwork at the Crying Coyote Barbecue in downtown Cave Creek on February 24th. That's a Saturday.
Oh.
From 3 to 6, and Hans Olsen and Jack Ellis are going to be there. Now, I haven't played the drums in a while, but Jack said, bring your drums. Mm-hmm. We got to do Route 66. And so we're going to get the band together one last time, and my artwork will be there. It's all free. It's open to the public, except you got to pay for your barbecue, and it's worth every penny.
Well, we're talking to, if you don't know by now, Bob Bozbell. I love our talks. It's been, this is the third one. If I can convince them to come back for more, I'd love to always talk to your other books, like The Trailblazers and Women. You have so many books out that are, that, you know, we could talk each one about, but you and I don't have that kind of time. I have that kind of time, but Bob is right where he wants to be, and he's busier than ever. Anything you want to plug before we go? Anything besides the artwork, or do you have an upcoming book or something out in the future that's sitting out there that hasn't gone to publisher yet?
Well, you know, we've pretty much hit on almost everything I'm working on. I do have a Illustrated Life and Times of Jesse James, which is put on the side burner. But I did make a fabulous tour of Missouri last May, and I had Mark Lee Gardner, the esteemed and wonderful author who wrote Shot All to Hell and To Hell on a Fast Horse on the Billy the Kid story. He was my guide. He's from Missouri. And I flew into Kansas City, and we went to the Jesse James farm, and then we went all across the country. And what's so cool about traveling with Mark is that we'd be driving along talking about history, what happened here, where were the bushwhackers, who's Bloody Bill Anderson. And then he would pull into somebody's driveway, and I'd go, why'd we stop here? And he'd say, well, get out. He wouldn't tell me. And we'd walk about 50 yards, you know, and we'd be in this clump of trees, and he'd say, look down. And it's where Bloody Bill Anderson was shot by militia, you know, April 1864, you know. And then we'd get back in the car, and we'd drive a little bit, and then he'd stop at a cemetery, and I'd go, what's here? And he said, follow me. And we'd go through all these old, you know, grass rolling over the graves kind of a thing. And we'd get up there, and it'd be John Newman Edwards, the guy who made Jesse James fame, a lot of people think. He was a journalist and a newspaper man like myself. And I'm sitting here looking at his grave. And so I loved the trip. It was fabulous. We ate great barbecue. We ended up in St. Joe and to, you know, the Jesse James house is with the bullet in the wall. And that was a lifelong dream, is to go there and see that. And Mike, you need to go see that. That's just a fabulous mecca for anybody who loves the Old West like we do.
Well, Mark Lee Gardner, I've interviewed twice. I just talked to Mark 2 days ago. I purchased To Hell on a Fast Horse. We're going to do a podcast interview about that book. And I've got two more interviews in the works with Mark. He's got a thing with me. He says, Mike, I won't be interviewed until you read the whole book. And I said, that book may take me 6 months. And he's like, I'll wait. Well, I'm like, I don't want to wait. I want to hear Mark Lee because he's funny. But yeah, I was following along through True West on your travel on the Jesse James. I think it was coinciding last year. I got up to Minnesota where the raids, I can't think of the town where the bank raids were at.
Northfield, Minnesota.
Yeah, I went to Northfield, Minnesota last summer while you were doing the trip with Mark. So we were out doing the same thing that we love, which is exploring and finding out more and seeing it for ourselves about Western history. Anything you want to add?
Well, I highly recommend the Northfield, Minnesota places where the James game a bit off more than two, and it's a fat. And Mark Lee Gardner's book is absolutely fantastic, and that'll be a linchpin in my book on Jesse James, because you know, I know that the Youngers and the James boys, they thought they could go up north and it would be easy pickings, and all these Norskis up there wouldn't fight back. And boy, did they run into a buzzsaw on that one.
Well, I'll wait for your Jesse James book to come out, and maybe we'll talk you back into coming in and talking about it. Of course, we're talking to Bob Bozbell. You can find Bob everywhere. make sure you find him on Facebook. Also, you can see the YouTube content. You haven't done many Facebook Lives in a while.
I just did one on Tom Mix, which is just up, and it's cranking, so check it.
Okay. And, of course, I want to thank him and Truist Magazine. You can go online and be a subscriber to Truist Magazine by going to truewestmagazine.com. Every issue is jam-packed, from Ask the Marshal to Western Roundups. He's got all sorts of stuff. Our friend Mark Boardman is in there. Wonderful photos, graphics, maps, color photos, art. It's all packed into one magazine. You can find him on Facebook, Instagram, X, Pinterest, and YouTube. So make sure you go to YouTube and watch their videos. And again, that's True West Magazine at truewestmagazine.com. I want to thank Mark and Eric over at Tombstone Epitaph at tombstoneepitaph.com, and my second family at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. This year for 2024, our roundup is going to be at Fort Smith, Arkansas, and we would love to see you there with tours, behind-the-scene tours that are not open to the general public, and it's going to be at Fort Smith, Arkansas. We'd love to see you there. Personally, I can't thank Bob enough. Every time that I email him or text him, he picks right up. Yeah, Mike, I'm ready to go and ready. Let's do it. And I can't thank him enough for that. Anything? One last thing? Anything, sir?
Check us out at 66kids.com. You'll be glad you did.
All right. Azar, I appreciate you guys. Make sure that you can find me if you're listening on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. They're all Stitcher. They're all there. You can also find me if you want to get a hold of me direct and more on a touch basis and see what I got going on. You can find me on Instagram at Cochise County_travels. You can also see some video and podcast as I load them through the year on my YouTube channel. If you have somebody that doesn't understand podcasts but understands, older folks that understand YouTube, like my friend Dave, he can't see very well, but he definitely knows how to get to YouTube. And you can find me at Cochise County_travels. And on Facebook, the same thing, Cochise County_travels. It's a private group, but I've got all sorts of folks in there putting out some wonderful content. As always, I appreciate everybody a bunch. Safe travels, and we'll see you soon.